Welcome to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. I'm Wendy Grinberg, Parenting Specialist, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Richard Weisbord, Lecturer in Education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and the Kennedy School of Government, and author of the book, The Parents We Mean to Be, How Well-Intentioned Adults Undermine Children's Moral and Emotional Development. Dr. Weisbord's work focuses on vulnerability and resilience in childhood, the achievement gap, moral development, and effective schools and services for children. Today we're talking about the role of the community, listening, and mentoring in raising moral children.
How do you think you became a moral person?
Well, you know, I appreciate you're saying that.
Where do you think your own ethics and morality came from?
Well, I have an interesting family background on this. I mean, just in the sense that my father was a real estate developer who in midlife, his midlife crisis was that he really decided that he was a closet academic and started a place called the Center for Psychosocial Studies, and one of the things it studied was moral development. So from a very young age, my father was giving me moral dilemmas, and particularly moral dilemmas that were created by a Harvard psychologist named Lawrence Kohlberg.
Oh, really?
And who became a friend of my father's and my doctoral advisor. So, you know, this is something I've been thinking about for a very long time. And my mother's been very involved in, and, you know, I think in our family there was a sense of responsibility and care for other people's kids, and it was really woven into our family. So I think the roots of this were early. The emotional roots were early. The intellectual roots were early. But, you know, I also want to say that I appreciate your saying it, but I'm uneasy about being characterized as a moral person. I guess I always feel like, feel like I have an enormous way to go, and that, you know, in some sense, we all do.
I'm intrigued by your use of we, the parents we mean to be, in the title. That's pretty rare, actually, in most parenting books, talking about the collective that way. So my question is, how and why should we care for other people's children if we want to raise moral children? And why is the community aspect important?
Well, you know, I think I appreciate your identifying this, because it is something I care about a lot. And part of the reason for using we is that I didn't want to convey it was the problem was those parents. I think we have a tendency to do it, to do that. That, you know, it's those parents that are crazed about their kids' achievements. It's those parents who don't care about their kids' morality. Well, I think it's a lot of us, and certainly me. I think there are things about our culture that, you know, the degree to which our culture is focused on kids' happiness and self-esteem, we're all implicated in a way. And the degree to which our culture has marginalized morality, I think we're all implicated in a way. So I don't think it's just them. I think it's us in a lot of ways. But I'm also making the case that, you know, just to give you an example, that, you know, almost all the parents we talked to, almost all the kids cared about morality. I think that's really important to say. It's, you know, whether they make morality the number one priority in their child raising is another thing. But they do care about their kids' morality. But I think they don't sometimes get that if they want their kids to be moral, that they have to be moral and they have to function as part of a moral community. And I think this is the answer to your question. So, you know, a lot of parents around their kids' school, you know, if a kid has a behavior problem in school, not their own kid, but some other kid in the classroom, they want the kid removed from the classroom because they're worried it's going to impede their own kids' academic development. Or parents will lobby for a gifted class but not recognize what the impact will be on the resources of the school and the school's capacity to meet the needs of other kids if it spends significant resources on a gifted class. You have to model compassion for everybody in the community, including the kid with the behavior problem. I think there are a lot of parents who don't get that. They end up lobbying very narrowly for their own kids.
You talk also about helping children find their passions. So I want to ask you how we can do that and why it matters when it comes to raising moral people.
I think you need to be recognized by your parents for a whole range of qualities. And you need to develop passions and things that are meaningful to you. And once you do that, you have something to, you know, you have a goal for your life, you have meaning in your life. When you don't have passions and when you don't have things that are meaningful to you, I think you're much more vulnerable to feel competitive with other kids, to feel envious of other kids, to measure your worth by the accomplishments of other people. And all of these things are undermining to morality. They're undermining to your ability to really care about other people and to respect other people and admire other people. So, you know, I think the chain I'm suggesting here is that when kids don't have passions, it's so diminishing to their sense of self. And because it's so diminishing to their sense of self, they have much less to give to other people.
Can you talk about the role of parents as mentors and the importance of listening in teaching morals?
Yeah, you know, I think we sometimes get in this false debate in this country, you know, where there are a lot of adults who say we should just tell kids what the values are, we should assert the values, assert the standards, and there are other adults who say we should just listen to kids. And we got to do both. You know, I feel like we got to listen to kids and we got to connect our values to their experiences. So, you know, in some of the examples we were talking about earlier, you know, where honesty and loyalty are in conflict, for example, it doesn't help those kids to just say over and over again, honesty and loyalty are important. They know honesty and loyalty are important. The problem is that they're in a dilemma where honesty and loyalty are in conflict. And I think to be helpful in those situations, we really have to listen to them. We have to understand specifically how honesty and loyalty are in conflict in this situation. And then we can begin to talk to them about, well, how are you honest in this situation? And how are you loyal in this situation? And I think that's more, you know, that's much more meaningful to them because it's embedded in their experience. It's not abstract.
Does it make sense to try to find mentors for your kids besides yourself? And where would you look? Who? What kinds of people make good mentors?
My boys really thrived playing sports with coaches who were very challenging with them, were much tougher on them than I was. There's some things about this coach I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my kids about that, and they didn't like it either. But what they did like is a kind of no-nonsense, high-demanding, you know, in the context of baseball. And, you know, my style is to be sort of softer and more complimentary and less demanding. You know, I felt like 95% of the feedback was not too harsh, and that 5% of the time the coach was kind of over the top. But my kids could handle it. You know, I felt like when I was parenting as my best, I was very, you know, aware of who my kids are, too. And you know, a couple of my kids, I think, really thrive under somebody who's so demanding. One of my kids, I think, probably wouldn't thrive under somebody that's so demanding. And, you know, it's really knowing your kids, and it's not conflating your temperament with your kids, too. Because, you know, I think I would have had a hard time with a coach that was that demanding. And I was partly trying to protect my kids because I was projecting. But they're different than I am, and they didn't have a hard time, which is great. And I think you also need people who can mentor you. You know, we all need parents to mentor. As parents, we all need other parents to mentor us, and we need reciprocal mentoring. You know, I think one of the things that's so problematic about parenting is it's so isolated, and we're in a culture, this is not true of many other cultures, where it's sort of forbidden to give feedback to another parent. One of the things I advocate in the book is that parents might say to two people they really respect and trust and who they think of as mentors for them to please give them feedback if they think they're doing something wrong with their kids.
So thinking about your own parenting, is there any advice you would give yourself?
You know, if I were to do it again?
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, I'm still in it. I shouldn't say do it again. But
well,
my kids are older.
Point.
You know, it's a great question. I think that one of the things that, you know, I'm trying would have been mindful, you know, try to be more mindful of, and I was partly aware of it, is that, you know, we're all subject to cultural trends, you know, and We're in a very child-centered age in a way, particularly in middle and upper class communities. I think that's true. And, you know, I think that when you see other parents doing and parenting a certain way, you sort of assume that you should be parenting that way as well. And, you know, often parents are modeling things that are very positive that you want to attend to. But I think it's really important to step back and to say and to realize this is just a parenting trend, too. And there are different trends 20 years ago, and there are different trends 50 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, one thing that parents might do is read one book on the history of parenting, because you realize that these trends come and go, and there may be trends that are really more aligned with what you believe. And you shouldn't kind of follow the herd in certain respects. And I think if I was doing it again, I would try to have not followed the herd as closely as I did, particularly when my kids were very young, and have really thought through more what about this parenting is really makes sense to me and what about it really doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you for listening to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. You can find more resources and let us know what you think at urj.org/parents.